Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, to whom it may concern. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the investor call on the 2014 figures. Let me just make a short introduction commentary on the ad hoc and the press release which went out last week on my on my farewell to Lenzing after 30 years. I have decided to leave Lenzing, and you surely will ask why. Thomas, Robert, and myself, I think we did a good job last year for 2014. We increased the EBITDA by 24%. We overachieved and really performed quite well on the cost-saving programs, excellent. Instead of the 60, we achieved 137. Third point, we have almost finished the strategy work now. But very important segment strategies are still in the preparation, I think, and will be published in June. And I think even most important is that I think we managed to within almost 1 year. To have a good new board team with Thomas and with Robert, and I think that made me to conclude and to come to the decision that's maybe the best for Peter to leave now the company after so many years. Of course, I leave with a very sad issue, working 30 years in Lenzing, 15 years on the board, having achieved a lot of things together with different teams, increasing the sales three times, profits almost four times, and increasing the market cap five, six times is not just my success, it is a success of all Lenzing managers and employees who worked for that. But even more, that's the reason to say goodbye. I surely will stay in the industry, and I'm sure that we will see each other here and there. I may come to one or the other roadshow still by the, until end of May. But to those who I'm not seeing again, I just say from here. Many thanks for your loyalty, many thanks for your cooperation, and I'm sure we will see each other again. So I come now to page three, to the executive summary. I think, of course, you have seen the numbers, so I'm not repeating them, but I think just the most important, on a like-for-like basis, we managed to make 5 million more turnover, that's 0.3 plus. Particularly, more important is that we manage on the background of a 2% growth in the cellulose business, an 8% increase in sales. That's about 70,000 tons coming from modal, tensil, and as well as viscose, coming from nonwovens as well as textile. So that's quite significant, meaning and resulting in market share improvements. On the other side, and Thomas will work out on that, we lost 13 cents on the average sales price, which is 120 million euro less turnover, and would be on a like-for-like basis also 120 million less EBITDA. I think very important, and already now feeling in 2014 the advantage, and more now in 2015, of course, is the successful ramp-up of the Tencel line. Really benefiting in 2015 from 67,000 tons more of Tencel. Robert has further embarked on even more Tencel and modal initiatives. He will work out on that. And if you just compared an EBITDA margin, average EBITDA margin for 2014, I would say on the background of the market situation, we are having lost almost $1 of price per kilo in the last 4 years, which is significant for that industry. To make a certain percent EBITDA margin is not bad, particularly 16% almost in the fourth quarter is pretty good, but we will talk about that later, how sustainable that is. A lot of that improvement is coming from the excellence program. You know, we planned 60 million. We delivered 137. Of course, you may ask why we didn't know that in November or in August. A lot of things really turned out to be 80% achievement or even 90% and 100% achievement in the fourth quarter. And of course, we don't want to sell the bear before it is not killed. So only in December we were sure how to do it. And as we had a quite good EBITDA and balance sheet, we also decided then to go for an impairment. Robert, Thomas will give the rationale for that. And that also resulted in a one euro dividend per share, because on the LEG local GAAP B&L, we see a quite good profit, net profit, which allows us to give also a kind of reflection of dividend continuity with 1 euro per share. If we look into 2014, what have been the key issues and what is driving the impairment? We see continuing margin pressure, and we will see also, if we look into 2020, which is very important for the impairment, a structural commodity type business in viscose. And that's we don't see an ice hockey stick on price-wise in viscose. We see more a structural flattening out, maybe even a declining price trend. I'm talking about structural price trend and not fly-ups, which surely will happen, but we have to see it from a very, very conservative structural point of view. And if we look into that, then we came to the conclusion that we have to depreciate and write off the goodwill we have in Indonesia, which is resulting from the buyout in 2007-2008 of the Indian shareholders at that time. Moving to page 5, here you see a very interesting chart starting from Q1 2011. With almost $1 or 1 euro difference between the dollar, the original currency price, and the translated euro price, and this difference then is coming closer and closer with the stronger and stronger dollar, and particularly because I just want to precipitate the questions you have. If you look on the dollar, on the gray line, you see that in February, actually, and in January, prices have come down, and Robert will work out why that happened. Not that Lansing is selling at such a bad price, but this is just a consequence of the very, very, very low and breakdown of oil prices and polyester prices. Luckily, but only to a certain extent, we have been able to compensate that by the strong dollar. You are following anyway on a daily basis what the dollar is doing. Last week we have been at 105, today at 109. Who knows? Next week it may be at 111. It may come down to 105. That's damn difficult now to make a forecast. I would say even for the second quarter, not to talk about the full year. And you see the volatility, at least for the fourth quarter or for the first quarter, we will be able to compensate for this reduction in sales prices. But we do not know, really do not know, firstly, how the viscose price will develop, and secondly, how we will be able to compensate for that. On the next page, also, some already asked about what's the impact of chemical prices Thomas then will work out the basis for 2015 excellence program, what structure, what is one-off, what is the target. But just to give you a hint and an indication how volatile chemicals can be, you see the sulfur price increasing continuously into 2000 back in 2014 and in 2015, primarily in Indonesia, means Asia, for our viscose operation. And you see on the right side the caustic price also primarily going up quite significantly in Indonesia, and that's driving cost as the Indonesian government is taking back utility, electricity and power subsidies, and that has led to a quite significant increase in electricity prices with our caustic supplier. And as we need almost 200,000 tons of caustic in Indonesia, $10 on the caustic price are 2 million. So, and that at 10% on the caustic price is not that much, but is immediately $3-4 million on additional cost. Let's move to page 7, Q4. Yeah, this is a nice story, Q4, but Q4 is also driven, as I mentioned, on a final decision and on final results on excellence. And there have been some millions included in that which haven't been included in the second or the third quarter. Sales have been quite strong, good mix, good modal sales, good tensile sales. Of course, we are feeling now the benefit of mix improvements from the new tensile line in Lansing. Financials, sales 10% up, sales 10% up. You see that the average fiber price was 4 cents above the average 2014 price. Also driven a little bit by the dollar, by the strong dollar, an EBITDA of 80, an EBITDA margin of 16%. But be careful, as I mentioned, there are provision issues in the fourth quarter. There have been FX issues in the fourth quarter. There have been excellence issues in the fourth quarter, and there has been a very dynamic market in the fourth quarter. Okay, so that's just a short overview, and then I'll hand over to Robert.
Yeah, thank you very much, Peter. On slide 8, you'll see the trends that we face in the market regarding cotton A index, the polyester fiber, and then the viscose staple fiber. And what you'll see is even going into 2015, you've had an ongoing decline in cotton, an ongoing decline in polyester. While cotton has bottomed out a little bit now in the first couple of months of 2015, you'll see that polyester, as of the first quarter, has continued to drop and is an extremely low level. This is definitely having an impact on our price setting power in the market on regular viscose, and makes it hard to defend our prices. We have an opportunity to move volumes in blends with cotton, but of course, against significant price pressure. If you look at slide 9, you'll see that the overall fiber market, as Peter mentioned, grew 1.9% overall fibers. The man-made cellulose fiber grew a little bit above that, was 2%. And as Peter said, we're very proud to say 2014 we had a growth rate of 8%, so significantly above the market in our market segment. Wool and cotton have remained flat, and the big winner, as in several years now, is synthetic fibers with a growth rate of about 2.9, out of which three quarters is the polyester fiber. So from that perspective, polyester remains a very strong market. What it means for us is that the 2% market growth shows that the cellulosic fiber still are a solid growth business, although it is at lower rates as we've seen in previous years. On slide 10, picture that you're very familiar with in the last reports. We kept reporting it. We now have concrete 2014 data, and it shows that while consumption has remained flat, production of cotton has peaked. So that means that inventory levels have reached again a record high. So right now we are talking about a little bit over 21 million tons of cotton. There has been a shift, however, in the market as China and its reserve policy in 2014, they have imported less cotton. So the domestic demand in China, the stock-to-use ratio in China has dropped from 155 to 147. But of course, with strong harvest of cotton in India and in the U.S., production has been high, less has been exported, so stock-to-use ratio in the rest of the world increased to 58%. On the viscose fiber environment, beginning of 2014, we saw a price level in China at around 12,000 RMB that dropped to about the 11,500. This continues even in early 2015. So from that perspective, we see a low but relatively stable price. The Chinese competitors are very cash-driven, so that gives us very little room for improvement on the pricing on the viscose side. And as you see in 2014, something like 200 to 250,000 tons of capacity has been added to the market. Some of these projects where the building has already been completed, but production might not have started up, some delays have taken place, and they are waiting until the pricing improves. On the dissolving wood pulp side, we've seen a anti-dumping charge several early last year. We've not seen any of that being passed on to be reflected in the viscose fiber prices in China. In fact, they have slightly come down. The Chinese government right now is considering a second phase of anti-dumping for pulp from Europe and South Africa, which might come into effect in 2015. So also there, the pressure continues. In order to really raise the barriers of entry, but also to defend the premium of our specialty products, we're really continuing, and I've reported that already in previous quarters, we're really continuing to push on the brand names. So the Tencel brand position is really one of the key areas of focus with very strong positioning in denim. Definitely a success area. We're really pushing now for specialty Tencel fibers to help our product mix going forward, fibers like Tencel A100 and LF. We're also successful with some private labels like Lidl and Chibo. And then in home, and in other markets, I mean like non-woven, we are very strong as well, continuing for bed linen and wipes. New business development is an area that is relatively small, but creates an opportunity for us to position our products in some emerging markets. One of the key things, as Mr. Hunsberger already mentioned, is that we are working on a strategy. We're looking at a go-to-market strategy that is more focused. So the global business development group has been broken down in four market segments: home and interiors, which really includes the bed linen and towels, separately managed from apparel, non-wovens, and the new business development, as I mentioned earlier. By doing this, we expect more focus to really pick out those products and those customers that are willing to pay a higher margin for our products. And herewith, I give to Thomas.
Yeah, quickly, I run over the financial results, which definitely are not surprising after our preliminary results communication and after what already was said by Peter in terms of the achieved results. So EBITDA really improved like-for-like comparison, so means without the result of plastics, Lenzing Plastics division, by 24% to 240 million EBITDA, which gives, let's say, a margin of 12.9% EBITDA margin, which is compared to 2013 an improvement, but in the last 15 years, average EBITDA margin for Lenzing a little bit, let's say, lower and not satisfying. In terms of EBIT, we have here on this slide 15, always a comparison with or without impairment, because the impairment, and I quickly go over that, the 94 million asset impairment really contains our Indonesian plant, and there all the goodwill was depreciated, and in our Indonesian subsidiary in the production there, what we already did last year, another impairment on the assets in terms of the still ongoing declining of local currency prices. So this is important for the impairment because it's not the euro prices. You have to take into consideration the local prices, means in renminbi in China and in US dollars in Indonesia. This is leading us to an EBIT of 22 million. And actually, after taxes and interest rates, to a net loss of 14 million. Divided by our 26,550,000 shares is a loss per share of 0.51 euro. So in the quarter four, Peter also already mentioned, looks perfectly with the 80 million EBITDA, but there are currency effects, there are provision effects, we release provisions there, there's excellence two effects, and there's also, if you see in the figures, Q4 reduction of inventory. So this is positively influencing, so you cannot multiply by four this figure to have whatever kind of run rate for a quarter. Going to page 16, on the cost side, there I only want to mention that in the like-for-like comparison, we achieved a reduction from 1,766 million to 1,704 million total OPEX, which is minus 3.5%. But take into consideration, we had a volume increase of 8%. So actually, it's 11.5% cost improvement, and most of that, or a lot out of that, from our excellence program. I come later to this, where we achieved 137 million. This is the profit and loss. More important for me is cash and the balance sheet. Going to page 17, actually we achieved really to manage our cash flow from operating activities, where we improved from 82 million to 290 million. And CapEx was reduced from 248 to 104 million. This with the effect of 60 million cash flow we got out of the Lansing Plastics is leading to an investment or investive cash flow improvement, reduction from last year 152 to this year 103 million. Does not mean that a CapEx of 100 million is satisfying, but it's really focusing on what is maintenance, and out of that another roughly 40 million for the Tensil plant. The free cash flow ends then with 150 million compared to 164 million the previous year. More important is the net financial debt, especially for our creditworthiness from the bank side. There we improved by 55 million. We promised to be below the 500 million. Now we are at 450 million net financial debt, and this gives us a net financial debt EBITDA ratio to 1.9 compared to the 2.2 from the previous year. So there I come afterwards in the next slide to the net debt reconciliation, that you see clearly the positive cash flow influenced that. But on the other side, we also paid the dividend, and take into consideration we had also 78 million factoring. The improvement of net trading working capital is a very small one, a slight one, but 4 million is also 4 million. So we did our job there as well in the trading working capital. Leads us in total to a liquidity from 280 million, taking also bank trusts into account, plus a 200 million unused credit lines, means 480 million roughly liquidity cushion, which also is healthy for us in this term, but ongoing to be improved. And going to the balance sheet, for sure, the paying of dividend on one hand side, but on the other hand side, also the impairments is bringing us to equity ratio from 44.9% compared to the 45.5% the previous year, so slightly less, but still very healthy. And we improved our net gearing from 45.5% to 42.2%. Net debt reconciliation really quickly on the page 18. There you see our gross cash flow, really the 253 million, excluding net interest and tax, is positively contributing to reduce the net debt. But on the other side, the red columns, the cash capex, plus paying the dividend and the change in other working capital, the increase in other working capital and some currency translation effects, leading us to the 450 million net debt by the end of December 2014. Cost savings, very important. FX, I got, and I still get, especially this year, all the question, where is the backwind from the currency exchanges, especially the very strong US dollar. So I want to give you a little bit clarity out of our profit and loss and also balance sheet figures that you see where it's really going to. So in the total sales, our hedging, and you should know we hedged, we have the three-third policy, so one-third in the budget period at September, 12 months rolling every month, the second third, and to the daily exchange rate, the last third. And we hedged with €1.47 at the beginning of last year and €1.34 by the mid of the year. So it's an average more than 1.30, which is compared to the today's 1.09, really bad hedging. So there we are losing actually in the revenues. And for last year, this was 5 million. So you see, if on the other side, the positive currency effect in the operating income and also in the financial results, in the net income, only 2.3 million headwind out of the foreign exchange topic. For next year, and that you see in the other operating income and comprehensive income, this hedging effect of minus 35 million and the positive currency effect of our foreign entities is 48 million, leading us to a positive other comprehensive income, which for sure helps us in this year, and we have already there in the last year. But please take into consideration the year before we had minus 31 million foreign exchange differences. So, and as you know, all this other comprehensive income, you only feel then in the profit and loss the next year. On the equity side, yeah, for sure, it was a little bit help, 15.88 million. Cost savings, page 20, very important to know. We announced that we will, we announced already that we have achieved more than 100, so actually 137 million. There are 107 million structural effects and 30 million one-timers. The structural effects of 107 will lead to 190 million in 2015 compared to 2013. For sure, to achieve our run rate of 160 full year effect in 2016, we have on top these pluses to deliver this year, but it would be, let's say, roughly 130 million we are aiming to have then the next year the full run rate. And this will also be divided, let's say, one-third by operational excellence, one-third personal costs, one-third material costs. So far to the cost savings. One big part within the cost savings is our repositioning of the Lenzing technique and the new organization of the technical service. So the main target was there really to bundle all our maintenance, global engineering, and also manufacturing capacities into one organization to reduce interfaces and to get synergies, and for also dividing what is only done internally, like maintenance and global engineering and global automation, and where we still provide external service, which is within the Lenzing Technik, but this is only focusing on manufacturing for filtration, bulk technology. And all together, we aim there for strong efficiency and productivity increases. I may now, for the outlook, hand over to Peter again, please.
Yeah, I'm on page 22, and maybe to summarize, this is surely a part of the new strategy, but to put it simple, it is value add. On the viscose side, it is cash cost, cash conversion, and cash flow. Cash cost to produce as efficient as possible, cash flow to reduce to the minimum possible capex, and cash conversion to be as efficient in production. Generally, we do not expect a significant change in the market dynamics. You see that we still have high cotton stock. We have very volatile oil prices and therefore polyester prices. We see cotton prices going up and down, now dipping again on the lowest level of the last 12 months. And on the positive side, I just, of course, as Thomas mentioned, I see the dollar kind of windfall. On the value side, Robert is working really day and night on new top line initiatives, extending the products, extending specialities within Modal, extending specialities on Tencel, and that's very helpful because now we have four sites. We can start specialization even more on Heiligenkreuz, different to that on Grimsby, different to that on Mobil, and also we see the benefit even if we produce standard in Lansing, but here we see mix improvements from the price. Cost leadership is not only in chemicals or in conversion, it is also on the pulp plant, and whether it's our own integration or our contracts, we need best cost. I think we did a pretty good job last year. Baskov has significantly improved, and Baskov also will improve even further this year together with our Lansing site. Financially, I think we are doing everything possible to have a better EBITDA than the 240. If everything comes together from the excellence, from the mix, from the value add, from the pulp side, there could be some improvement, but we are just now in end of March, and we really have to see now how the second quarter is going. As you have heard from Thomas, the 160 on the million on the excellence is key for 2016, and to bridge the 107 structural to the 160 structural 2015 is key with a lot of new initiatives. We have to over deliver on the 2015 because of course we have also melting issues where we do not achieve 100%, where the initiative is not successful, so we need a lot of other ideas to compensate on the capex or as well as on the cash flow. Trading working capital is key, reducing pulp stock, reducing fiber stock, have efficient and reduced chemical stock. So overall, quarter one, without giving details, is quite good, but as Thomas mentioned, by far not we are setting a new record, or we are matching fourth quarter 2014. Okay, are there questions, please, now?
Excuse me. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. Please limit yourself to one question only so that everyone has a chance to ask a question. Should there be time left, we can start a second question and answer session. One moment for the first question, please. The first question comes to the line of Mr. Matthias Pfeifenberger of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Stephanie Jens. It's more a statement from my side than a question. And the only thing to ask that question is to read from the press release. So, Mr. Untersberger, you were quoted with having outstanding expertise and broad experience, and you also managed to successfully restructure the company, and you put in place the state-of-the-art Tensil line. So my question really is why there is not enough incentivization for you to stay on board. And I leave it up to you to comment or answer. I'm just wishing you the best, if I may, respectfully, and I always enjoyed the quite good mood in the conference calls, except difficult times. And my fundamental question would be, if the cuts that you are doing, in addition to what has been achieved, especially in Lenzing Technik, is a bit cutting into the bone. I mean, I know you'll have plenty of well-educated engineers, but I don't know who will be there if a new Tensil line will be set up in China, and if it's going to take 1-2 years instead of one. So are these measures a bit harsh? And given that you're already at double-digit margins again, so is it really necessary to cut into the bone to eliminate functions like Lenzing Technik, which is also a think tank? And that also, I think, goes for you with that kind of experience leaving the company. So, I mean, is it really, I don't know, do we have to question corporate governance at this stage?
Well, Matthias, many thanks, but to answer the question, I think on the Technik, you have to, this is not just Lenzing Technik. You have to see it from a broader perspective. We are talking in Lenzing about almost 1,200 people doing kind of technical service, including maintenance, repair, capex, construction, and engineering. So just take the number of 750 employees in the Lenzing Technik. Let's take it from that point. We are going to sell smaller businesses out of the Lenzing Technik, which have nothing to do with the fiber business, and which businesses who are even quite profitable, but actually are not giving any value add to our fiber business. So, okay, this accounts for about 170 employees. In addition, of course, we have also some smaller parts who are not economical in the Lenzing Technik. We may liquidate or we may also sell. So we are coming now to the major point, and this is as Thomas worked out, we are concentrating the maintenance groups. We have one big maintenance group. This is the fiber maintenance group, 250 people. So this fiber around this fiber group, we are adding now the Lenzing Technik maintenance group, which makes very good sense, particularly on the fact that we have reduced capex and therefore also engineering work and construction work and coordination necessary to do that from 300 down to 200, and this last year 200, and also this year 200, and maybe next year 200 million. So there are engineers and ours, thousands of hours, who are not used effectively for the time being. That's for the engineering. The same is for the automation. We have an automation group in Lenzing-Technik for a good reason. We have an automation group within the maintenance fiber maintenance department, and we have an automation group on a global perspective. So we are concentrating it on a global basis. And the Lenzing-Technik, of course, after you deduct and you take away the businesses we sell, after I would say outsourcing a lot of workers jobs, which at the end of the day we can buy in, and I think almost at the same quality, maybe not in the first 6 months, but after 1 year, these guys will learn the environment, will learn how to do it. We can save up to 20% on the hourly wages. That's a strong impact. So together with my colleagues, we are of the clear opinion that this makes a lot of sense. Cutting to the bone, yeah, but in times it is necessary. You have to do it. We are not cutting the bone, but cutting to the bone.
Okay, I get it. Maybe an add-on, if I may, just fundamentally, I mean, I think the big theme in this presentation is polyester prices, and they have come off. So I wonder why the growth in man-made cellulosics was a bit slower. And one of our board members called polyester the big winner. So what is it really? I mean, is it just because polyester is cheaper, is it because it has come down, or is it also because of sports fibers and all that stuff? And what I really want to get at is viscose just still too expensive for more substantial growth to kick in?
Well, I think this is Robert. So I think on the polyester side, I think you're right in a way that it's definitely price is a big factor, but also if you look at the last several years, the polyester innovation has significantly advanced the product, and it's mainly the specialty polyester fibers, indeed, that make your sports clothing more comfortable, or the various blends. So it's a combination of a change in our lifestyle. Definitely in the United States, much more casual. Most of the men, they have cotton polyester blends, easy just to go to the office, in their shirting, in their trousers, etc. Sportswear becoming more and more popular, and as I said, with better functionality. So I think that is a big factor. On the other side, when you talk about the cost of viscose is too expensive, No, I don't think so. I mean, it's very difficult to say. It's more difficult. I think the viscose is, from that perspective, closer to the cotton because the functionality that polyester brings in the sportswear. But the viscose cotton blends have been reduced simply because of the drop in cotton prices. So I still think that longer term, the man-made cellulose fibers have a place. And in the industry, and you know, it still is growing a little bit above average, the cellulosic fibers versus all the fibers. So the growth is still there. It's slower, but it's still above average.
Okay, thanks.
The next question comes from the line of Mr. Stefan Trubrich of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my questions. I would appreciate if you please comment on in the outlook statement and also in the presentation back a couple of slides earlier, the cash cost leadership, particularly in pulp, was emphasized. In the outlook, you mentioned that cost leadership through any kind of integrated pulp supply, make or long-term buy, and you also, is an additional pulp plant back on the agenda. I remember back 2 to 3 years, you were already considering such a move, but then refrained from it. So could you comment on that, and also if that is basically part of the strategy going forward, that you already have more concrete plans on the Tencel side, potentially in China. So if you could share your view on that one, I would appreciate it. Thanks.
So at 55% of our costs are pulp costs, and so far we are integrated with 52%. For sure, this is very important, and we learned out of our strategy exercise that cheap pulp, either if you produce it yourself cheap pulp or you buy it from your suppliers cheap, is very critical to the performance of our fiber business. So for sure, we are looking in all strategic options, what is there possible in terms of whatever, joint ventures, in terms of planning a pulp mill. And, you know, especially Peter and the team were looking around all over the world about pulp factories. And we would be stupid if we not look at all opportunities and all alternatives. And you also know we are in the negotiation of prolonging the supplier contracts, and there you have to look into all possibilities. And for sure, it's worth reducing further the pulp costs.
And do you have already an idea when such steps could be taken, or now with the earnings recovery ahead and potentially a nice windfall profit in 2016 related to the US dollar appreciation, could it be that with that you might accelerate your CapEx plans, that the Tencel plant is maybe launched already in 2016 due to the recent success of the ramp up in Lenzing?
Not in short term. So, as you said, look, the investment of a pulp mill is extremely huge, and you know our financials, and this has to be, let's say, at the moment in the volatile market and with the, let's say, volatility, we are not really knowing where it goes to. It would also be a kind of risk of suicide if you invest now in a pulp mill.
Okay, I definitely appreciate that. But could you comment, because you mentioned the net debt, that has developed nicely in 2014, and you in the outlook you state that you want to keep net financial debt at the current level. But if you target an EBITDA improvement and the CapEx is around 100 million, the free cash flow should result in a clear decline in net debt. What have I miscalculated, or why, on the other hand, are you so conservative in this net debt outlook?
You did the math correct on one hand side, but take into consideration we had 78 million factoring and reverse factoring in the this year's cash flow improvement, and this action you cannot repeat every year. So that's why we are a little bit more conservative, but for sure, if we aim to a slightly improvement of EBITDA, this should also result in a lower net debt.
Okay.
Stefan, there's another point. There are certain so-called analysts who have a consensus on dividend payouts for the next couple of years.
Yeah.
And if I add that together, this is a significant cash out, which of course then is missing on other reductions of net debt.
But still, if we get to the EBITDA, what consensus currently assumes of 270 million and have 100 capex, there is a lot of room left in between to reduce net debt further. I mean, one thing that I wanted to discuss, and if we add the cash flow, could you explain to us again why the cash taxes have been basically zero in 2014 and what we can expect in 2015 then?
You mean from the net financial debt to the gross cash flow on the slide 18, the 0.4 for taxes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but this is, let's say, in total, for sure we have to pay taxes and have a cash out and an average of 25% all over the world because taxes are increasing. So this was a, let's say, 2014 positive effect. Also, if you look then in our annual report, you will see that there are also activated taxes in terms of the impairment companies.
Okay, so basically next year we have then on the working capital side probably and on the cash tax side a negative swing. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question comes to the line of Mr. Christian Weiss of Baader Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, gentlemen. Just a quick question regarding your calculation. You say that your net debt EBITDA was at 1.9 times. Now, does that include pension provisions first? And second, did I get you right that you said, Mr. Untersberger, that first quarter 2015 will not match fourth quarter 2014?
Net financial debt is purely net financial debt without the provisions for pensions.
Yeah, I mentioned that when Thomas mentioned about provision movements for fourth quarter, I would say final bookings for excellence savings, very good, really extremely good sales, volume-wise as well as mix. And you compare that with just the start of the excellence. Of course, we started 107, and we have many other initiatives, but sales in the first quarter due to the Chinese New Year are not that strong, but this is as per expectation, this is no surprise. And price movements on the viscose side, even if the mix is pretty good, no provision movements in the first quarter. I would say per se it has to be lower than the fourth quarter.
Okay, thanks.
The next question comes to the line of Mr. Bernd Mora of RCB. Please go ahead, sir. Excuse me, Mr. Bernd Mora.
Yes, sorry. Sorry, good afternoon. First question, I want to come back to the topic of Lenzing Technik, given the downscaling of your capacities there. You now have about external sales in the engineering division of 90 to 100 million euros. By how much you think this line will be lower due to the cut of capacities this year or probably next year, given that 2015 is a transition year here? That's point one. And question two, the negative hedging effect you take into the P&L, which are compensating the positive effect on sales or on average selling prices. Can you make a comment what on the figure in 2015, in the fourth quarter 2014, what negative hedging effects you included in the sales line and give a guidance perhaps for the first quarter 2015 that we get some sensitivities for this as it's clearly becoming more and more important?
I start immediately with that. Yeah, let's say you see there, and you can imagine that in the quarter four, the effect was higher than altogether over the year, where we still had in the first three quarters a very high exchange rate or a still strong euro compared to the US dollar. So it's roughly 1.2 million the effect in the quarter four. All over the year, in the quarter one, there we have to really read a little bit the crystal ball, because look what, and I mentioned that with our hedging strategy. Till September, we will lose every month, and accounting-wise, also already starting in the first quarter, because you have to allocate these hedges not per month, but to all the year. We will have a huge effect, negatively influenced, and all getting into the revenue actually till September, because this is the period where we normally hedge the budget. Really benefiting, we can then, because then the first third and the second third, which is actually the budget yearly hedging and the rolling forecast hedging, this is then over for October, November, December. And if then, let's say, a 1.05 exchange rate will still be there, then we have a huge effect. And for 2016, if it will be like that, you can say it's roughly the 60 million if you take into consideration a $400 million exposure. So then you can do the math on that. But the hedging is in the same amount, unfortunately, till September, what we gained. So if we win 10 million all over the year, what was this year 2.3 million, we doing a good, having a good development in that case.
Thank you for the explanation. Perhaps one follow on this. Am I right to assume that the negative sales effect from hedging in 4Q is about roughly 5 million euros, something around this figure?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Bernd, to answer your question on the Lenzing Technik, generally the Lenzing Technik 2014 was a 50% internal and a 50% external business. So we are talking about roughly 45 million external sales. With the businesses for sale, theoretically, this is the Nanjing workshop, which is external. This is the sheeting business, which is for sale, and the Leno, of course, this is about, let's say, roughly 50 million, which may get out of sales, but it depends, and that makes it now difficult to really put a quantitative figure on that. The figure it depends when we are going to sell it, because as long as it's not sold, it is external turnover. On the other side, the manufacturing, which comprises about the technical manufacturing, which comprises about 250 people, the pulp engineering as well as the filtration engineering, so all in all is about 300 people. So that stays, and this is primarily also external business. However, we see that in the first quarter sales, but this is a quite seasonality, is a little bit down as to budget, but this is just 12 a year divided by 12, so this is a normal deviation. Mm-hmm. Let's see how it is in the second quarter. Then I would say in May we can give you a better approximation.
Okay, thank you then.
We have a follow-up question from the line of Mr. Matthias Pfeifenberger of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, a couple of follow-ons. Firstly, on China, given the impairment, is it now a candidate for sale too? And in the bigger picture in that regard, I mean, who and when will present the portfolio review? I mean, I thought it's still due. Now we have a management change. So is that to be expected ahead of June plus some phase-in time?
Well, on China, particularly, I would say on your recommendation and then on Stefan's recommendation, of course, it was also the opinion of the board. We are looking on all options. If you have a an operation which makes losses, even if you take out a lot of cost, and the market dynamics still do not change, you have to consider everything. So from cutting further cost, but this is a not an endless story. Improving top line, starting with additional top line initiatives, what Robert is doing with maybe black fiber or Lodenia fiber, and. Maybe taking in a new joint venture partner, maybe selling it out, maybe more spalling a line. You name it, there are many options. On the strategy, Robert mentioned that I would say the basic view is ready. Now we are formulating on paper the strategy, and Robert is working on very detailed go-to-market strategies, which are segment strategies. What he mentioned, that's not easy because it takes a lot of know-how and market intelligence. From the one side, interviews with customers and non-customers and experts, and I think you are right, by June, we will come back to you.
Okay. Then also, one question on the Q4 again. What would be the level of EBITDA without any funnies or one-offs? Is it possible to quantify in terms of what you consider one-off, and then if you deduct that, what would be a level? Also on the cost savings, the delta from the 119 million structural to the 160, how much of that delta is actually structural, and is it all structural, or is there also some one-offs in there?
No, the delta is easy to be explained. This is structural. If you look on page 20, the 160 total run rate is really a structural effect, and means on the other side that we are really aiming without one-offs in the year 2015, yeah, this roughly 130 million, and this should aim then in 2016 to 160. But as Peter already mentioned, this last mile is not that easy, like, let's say, the first meters. So, and as you also said, we have to be careful not cutting our bones, so into the bones or to the bone, but not through the bone. So this is also to take into consideration. So the other, what is a normal quota? With all these effects, to be honest, not so easily to calculate, because this is, let's say, a normal, and you know it also from quarters before, is at least 30% less.
Yeah, great. That gives us a good feel. Just in light of consensus numbers, I mean, I'm looking at 260 to 270 million for most of the estimates. Some people even distorting the picture with 320, but let's say it's 260 to 270. Sounds about right in terms of the cost savings spillover from 2014 and also the incremental savings in 2015. But really, I mean, pricing wise, what would be the downside to viscose prices if they would be where you think they should adjust to in light of polyester price? I mean, is that the 10% decline from here?
Prices. So, to be honest, our customers are asking us for sure to give the invoices not in US dollars, but in euro or in other currency. So then you see immediately that even this effect is not there. And then in local currency, no matter if in China or in Indonesia, the prices are further reduced in the first, let's say, 3 months by another 10% already. So if this goes on, there is even more than 10% possible. And with this, wherever the oil price will end, this polyester pressure, what Robert mentioned, and also take into consideration, and I guess it was already mentioned, the percentage of the polyester in the fiber is also increasing, because for sure it's getting cheaper, a shirt or whatever, textile, when you put in more polyester.
Yeah, okay. So just to confirm, Robert, you also think that the correlation to polyester prices is quite a strong one, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, both cotton and polyester, there's definitely a correlation.
Yeah.
Short term, maybe a little bit less, but mid to longer term, for sure.
So the EBITDA improvement this year will heavily depend on if viscose prices adjust to the respective levels compared to polyester or not.
Yeah, I think the two aspects. So one of them is really, you know, the regular offering, which is definitely heavily dependent. The reason why we are refocusing the marketing and business development sales organization is to find those applications and customers that are willing to pay a premium, that we're going to be for the performance that our products are bringing. And as Peter mentioned, to invest in specialties, be it black viscose, be it a finer detex viscose, be it different colors of modal, micromodal, or even the recently launched micro-tensile A100, those are all specialty products. And with those specialty products, we should become less dependent on the commodity pricing of polyester.
Yeah, great. That's all from my side. Thanks, Jens. Very helpful.
Thank you.
Matthias, just a comment. If you take a look, it maybe take too long, you just take it from that side. We have 30% now specialties volume-wise. We have 38% specialties sales-wise. Robert definitely will be in a position to increase that to more than 40% just from the quantitative perspective, that we have 30,000 tons more, additional more tensile. Not to talk about mix improvements, not to talk about more modal applications, more modal products, and. And I think he also told you that, even if prices are pressurized, but the pressure, of course, on modal and tensile is there, if viscose prices would go down, but it cannot go down indefinitely. So from that, there is a kind of umbrella and protection.
That's for sure a fair statement, but all I'm trying to get out was that even the 260, 270 that we are forecasting are not in the box, yeah?
Of course not. No. It's March only, no?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's fine. That's very helpful. Thanks very much.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, you may press star and one on your telephone at this time. The next question comes in line of Mr. Günther Eich of Eich Trade Int. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. With your acquisition of Bosel Pasco in Czechia in 2010 and 12, did you also buy with this company forest? I mean, you are in Moravia, there in Ostrava. And if we see the development of trees and so, as the prices, that would have an impact on your products or not.
Günther, yeah, this is right. But when we bought the plant, we knew that there is forests, and we have no single forest and no single hectare. You are right. Wood costs have come down, have risen significantly, but on the other side, we put in all our efficiency experts and energy experts, and we are making now with 260,000 tons of viscose pulp very good money in Pasco. We are very happy that we have it.
Okay, thank you.
The The next question comes to line of Mr. Fabio Lopez of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hello, hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking the question. Peter, good luck on your next step. Just want to follow up or ask a question on China and the cotton stocks and the threat of substitution. What have you seen any viscose losing any market share for cotton? And do you have any visibility on China's policy towards the inventories at this stage? Thank you.
Well, I would say that we haven't lost market share because against cotton, because cotton was 0% consumption growth, and Lansing viscose was 2%, and Lansing even 8%. So I care more about Lansing than the other viscose producers. I think you understand that. So we are all pretty happy with that. On the cotton China. Robert mentioned, Chinese are changing every month the policy, just reflecting that they don't know what to do. And as even the Chinese cannot eat cotton, that's surely going to be an issue. You are right. It may take 4 or 5 years to get down from 22 million tons of cotton to, I would say, more reasonable 15 million. But also psychology is a major player in that. As soon as the absolute volume will see the first sustainable decline, I think we will see much stronger cotton prices.
Fair enough. Thank you.
The last question will come from the line of Mr. Franz Hohl of Erste Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. I wanna come back to the one-offs in the fourth quarter. You say that about 30% of EBITDA we're talking about some 20-30 million in the final quarter are coming from one-offs, especially from provision movements. So can you give more details on that? That's a significant number.
No, it's not only provisions. We said excellent foreign exchange provisions and inventory change.
So
because if you
windfall
look
gains from inventory, you're saying, included.
Sorry?
So that's windfall gains from inventory revaluation.
Oh, it's not windfall. We reduced heavily our inventories in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but that's a cash flow item and not an EBITDA item.
No, there you are correct, This is not an EBITDA
exactly.
Item, yeah. But
so what was
in the Q4.
Talking in P&L terms? So
the
what
P&L
is the effect
is
of provisions?
Foreign exchange, provision, and excellence program. And as we mentioned, you make simply the math. We announced we will have 90 million, and we were at about whatever after quarter three, achieving 60 million savings, what we always announced. And now all of a sudden we are from 60 to 137. And there is a one-off also in this 137. There you can also see that a lot of one-offs out of the saving programs have been actually in the quarter four.
So these 30 million one-offs that would have also been part of my question, those are all in the fourth quarter, you say?
No, not all, but a lot.
Franz, let's say it this way: they have been booked primarily in the fourth quarter, knowing that they may come partly in the third quarter. But to be sure to book them, we booked them in the fourth quarter. Just to give you an example, we are selling trading merchandise from, for instance, Kelheim, which we did at a loss. So we did everything possible to cancel and to renegotiate this contract. This took a long time. We had a quite significant provision for that into 2014, almost double digit million provision. So at the end of the day, in fourth quarter, we managed to get a solution to that, so we could release most of this provision. So, but I cannot book that in the third quarter if I'm not sure that I can do it. So we only can book it, and I even can do it partly, yeah, because if it is not clear, we even can't do it partly. So this was a nice positive release of a provision.
Okay, and that is included in what you describe as a one-off cost saving.
It is a one-off cost saving. It may be even a kind of structure. It may even have a kind of structural character, because we're also not going to have these losses in 2015 and 2016. But the booking took place as a provision release in the fourth quarter 2014.
Mm-hmm. And the magnitude of that's a high single digit number, and the total magnitude of all those one-offs, is that in the range of 20 to 30 million in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, take it more to somewhat a little bit below 20. Go back to the EBIT that we had in third quarter. I think this is a good indication, the third quarter EBITDA, and some millions up and down. You also have in third quarter, even if it is rather flat on provision and rather flat on other extraordinary gains and losses, then you have the difference between the third quarter and fourth quarter EBITDA.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. A brief question, if I may, also on the situation in China. So you are loss-making on EBITDA, I assume, and is that also true for your competition, or do you have an overview of the whole industry?
Competition is I would say knife cut competition, typically commodity type conversion cost production. Chinese are not, not able, but not ready to accept that they should earn depreciation. There are crazy guys, knowing that they make losses, still saying we have to increase our capacity because otherwise we lose the permit to do so. And asking, are you crazy because you make losses? Yeah, but if we don't do the investment in 2015, we cannot do it in 2016. And at the end, you hear arguments, which you would, which we would consider as irrational. But okay, Chinese are doing so.
But on EBITDA, they are still earning money.
On the EBITDA, they may earn money, but they are not earning their depreciation. If you explain them, my dear friend, in 10 years you have to maybe renew your plant by a new machine or whatever, or by a new boiler. They say, let's see in 10 years. So they simply are not, and this is, France, maybe the most important point, most of these guys have never seen a downturn. Now they are in the third year or fourth year of the downturn, and they have really to experience such thing. And at the end of the day, many will not be able to repay the debt. It has to be seen how positively or negatively that affects the Chinese supply-demand dynamics.
Uh-huh. Is there also a danger of Indonesia becoming EBITDA negative?
I wouldn't say so, no.
Okay. And final question, if I may. Those cost savings, structural cost savings of 160, just to make clear, that includes the savings or reorganization of Lenzing Technik or not?
Yes.
It includes it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Excuse me, this is the conference operator. This is the last question we are able to take, as another meeting will follow shortly and we are out of time. Follow-up questions may be forwarded to investor relations. Gentlemen, you may madam, you may continue with any other points you wish to raise.
No further question. Okay, then many thanks for your participation. As mentioned, if you have any other question, please refer back to Mrs. Knipp. She is ready to answer. Stephanie is ready to answer all your questions. Many thanks and good luck and all the best. Bye-bye.